Yeah, right. I'm a service provider. I'm based at the University of Manchester, but I work in a section that provides services to the whole of the UK's academic and research communities. We're principally funded by JISC, but we also get some direct funding from elsewhere. What kind of services? Well, it looks a bit like a monopoly board. If we start off with, say, bibliographic services over here, we receive funding directly from Thomson Scientific to provide first-line support for Web of Knowledge. We developed a system for the British Library on ETOC data. We offer, outside of bibliographic services, scientific databases, census information here with a visualisation front-end. We host teaching and learning materials, and I'll show you one of those services, and geospatial data, so simple thing here, like satellite images. Right, so that's the background. In 2004, we started to look through what would be involved if we were to shibboleise the services. So I don't expect you to actually read what's on there, but the colours denote the types of services. So I went through and looked what kind of registration requirements there might be, what attributes were captured, where they were captured, why were you capturing them. Was it a requirement of the rights holder? Because one of the things that I stress is that we don't own the rights to anything we serve, and that's quite important later on. So we're bound by terms and conditions. Also, what exactly was in place to govern the authorisation and authentication mechanisms in place? And what attributes were currently used by the service, and where were they gathered from? The principal thing to notice is that all the lines are different. And that's ignoring the fact that they're all on different platforms and use different software also, but it served its purpose. Now, as a service provider, it's the user experience that's very top of my worry list, and I'm just going to give you share some observations. It's a bit like washing dirty laundry, because I'll show you some screenshots from two different services, and stress. I'll stress that I'm using screenshots so that I know what will happen next. Right. Start off with hairdressing training, which always tends to raise a smile. It's a service that is online teaching materials that's used for vocational training. In the UK, we call them further education institutions. All kind of images pop into your head when you talk about online hairdressing training. Imagine sitting in front of this and cutting your own hair, but anyway. It's professionally developed. So if you log into this, you've seen this before. If I go through and I take my home institution, MIMUS, select that, I put in my credentials, and it quite rightly refuses to let me in because currently we're not authorised to access it. MIMUS don't subscribe to hairdressing training. And it's the only reason I'm putting that in is that that's the downside of having a central waif, in that it's completely unconnected to your eligibility to access the material. So it's a complete waste of time asking for things that you can't have. And when I was searching for things that typify that, I don't know how many people are familiar with the Monty Python cheese shop sketch. I've probably lost half the audience, but I did a little bit of testing to start off with. But John Cleese, who's the guy on the right, goes into a cheese shop and then runs through a list of cheeses one at a time, asking if Arthur Wensleydale, who's the person on the left, has them. And for a variety of reasons, the answer's no. It does end with John Cleese actually shooting him, but if you want to look at it, it's on YouTube. It's available on YouTube, and it typifies it best. So it's better if perhaps when they were logging on, they're just shown at the moment. This is just a test setup there, a list of the sites that do subscribe to it. But it does put the onus on the service provider to create that. We saw already that Elsevier do this with Science Direct in production. But even so, if I go through and I'm not able to pass through sufficient attributes for the service provider to make an authorisation decision, how do I tell the user? Because it pops up in front of them. What you don't do, I would suggest, is to tell the poor user that they haven't asserted the edgy person scoped affiliation attribute via shibboleth. And I'm going to come back to error messages and things like that later. Just to finish on a high, when it works, you just click on login, slightly different presentation, and then you're through. Okay. I'll turn to another service now, which is slightly more involved in that it does involve the transmission of attributes and currently a registration step. So if I'm in here and I want to download some geospatial data, which I'll choose to take off here in the form of 100 kilometre tiles, and I'm interested in the Shetland Isles in northern Scotland, and I want them in whatever kind of format that is. I click and it then echoes, and it's at this point now there's an authentication authorization check, because I'm actually trying to download the data. So we go there through, and now it's slightly different in that if this is the first time through, the attributes have been passed. So down at the bottom there, there's personal information about me, including my email address and department. That's because under the terms and conditions of our supplying it, the rights holder, the European Space Agency, it currently requires us to log individual user data, use of it, so it's for an audit purpose, I guess. But it does raise the question of how you validate it. Currently the users register in the production system, and it does beg the question of how you validate it. But here, if you like, the attributes being passed through introduces an element of quality assurance. So it's better from a service provider's point of view, but does raise other issues. It's then used to accept certain terms and conditions. The same is true for census data that we hold, which is under what's called Crown copyright, which means it's essentially owned by the Queen. I'm not convinced that the Queen is actually all that bothered about what you do with census data, but it's there, it's a legal requirement. So if I confirm that and go through, hello Ross, you can have your data as a file. But it begs the question again, what happens if you're not able to supply all the registration attributes? So if I go through here, there's just I've logged on as M Mouse. There are no attributes that have made it through for email and department. So what we've done is we've prompted for input. It begs the question of, well, how did you validate stuff they put in anyway? So if I was just to send this with those fields blank, it will enforce, you know, you have to put something in there. And similarly, if I put one in with a badly formed email address, again, we could pick that up. But that's it, really. It would accept it and put through there on a not very convincing name. But even if you've registered and you come through subsequently, if you haven't got all the attributes available, we wanted to look at, is there a way that we can get that information back to the user onto the identity provider in a format that didn't disturb the user too much, but was then still a suitable diagnostic to go back to the person who manages the identities there. So we put up an error message here, and the text, the meaningful text, within an email address which can just be posted on by the user. Okay, I'll just finish with some questions. There's six questions that popped into my head, and they haven't really gone away. Current practice, it was a bit of a shock to go through and have to document what we did for each of the services and understand them. But it's important that you have a baseline position. The whole issue of which federations you join is an issue for service providers, because they tend to be organised on geographic basis, so you'll need one to cover European involvement, global involvement. They can be sector specific, so you're bound to be a member of more than one. The attributes, a lot of choices in there. If I found that if we went to the application development staff, they would say, well, these are the attributes that are required for the service to function as intended, which could be different from what the rights holder might say is required. If you go in a commercial organisation, I would think to the marketing department, they would possibly have a slightly longer list of attributes it would be ideal to capture. And also we found from a user support perspective, if a user's having difficulty using a service and they phone up and their log files are totally anonymous, it's a bit more complicated to sort out what it is that they're experiencing problems with. You couldn't really ask them for their EduPerson targeted ID, for example. And the whole area of registration, being able to skip over that would be handy, so it's sort of, can we move to quality assured data versus user input? And then pity the poor user, because we did find there's an awful lot of toing and froing, particularly when you're in a mixed environment. And then how you tell people, that's not just the end users, but everybody you're involved with, how you explain middleware, which is underwhelming when it works and overwhelming when it doesn't. So I'll move on now to we get a word from our sponsor.